Okay. Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming. So today, as Milt said, I'm going to talk to you about a project in an organic mango farm in Southern California, and we're using biochar and cover crops to improve the soil fertility and ultimately increase the health of the trees and the yield of the mango fruit there. Okay, so I'm not going to talk too much about biochar because Milt is giving a whole talk on it in the next presentation, but it's a charcoal or charcoal-like substance that's used as a soil amendment, and it improves a lot of the physical qualities of the soil, such as water holding capacity and nutrient exchange capacity. What I'm interested in is how it impacts soil microbiology. So there's a lot of evidence in the literature to suggest that it does impact soil microbiomes. In general, microbial biomass is found to increase when you add biochar to soils. Mycorrhizal fungi are often positively affected by biochar additions as well. This seems to be especially true for ectomycorrhizal fungi, which are important for coniferous species. And it also increases biological nitrogen fixation in legume plants like common beans. So it seems to increase these symbiotic interactions, mycorrhizal fungi and rhizobia, but it also increases free-living plant growth-promoting organisms. So there was a 2010 study that showed 20 unique isolates from biochar-amended soils, and 16 of those were free-living plant growth-promoting or biocontrol organisms. So two of the ways that biochar is maybe thought to do this is that it just increases overall plant growth, so there's more root surface area for the plant to interact with soil microbes. Another theory is that the nanopore structure in biochar can provide a suitable habitat for microorganisms. So this slide here shows scanning electron micrograph image of some biochars. The top two are fresh, freshly made biochars, and you can see there that there's a lot of microbial activity there, fungal hyphae and also bacterial cells on those surfaces there. And down to it at the bottom, are actually two older biochars. So the one on the bottom left is about 100 years old, and the one on the bottom right is 350 years old. And you can see that these compounds are still, they have a lot of microbial activity going on in them. So it's not just the, you know, the introduction of some labile carbon that you add with biochar. It's actually the structure of the charcoal itself that seems to be providing a stable habitat for these microorganisms. And so this stability is important when we're talking about organic farms in California, because there's a lot of challenges with turnover when you add like amendments to soil because of the extreme conditions that we have there. So this is a map of California. The Central Valley is where most of the agricultural production is, but there's also a lot, there's a couple of valleys down in the south near Riverside where we are. And that's the Coachella Valley and also the Imperial Valley below the Salton Sea. So this this study here that we're doing is in the Coachella Valley, which is right above the Salton Sea. And there's a lot of barriers to organic fruit production out there in the desert. As you would imagine, there's extreme temperatures. So we actually do get freezing temperatures in the desert. It can actually have some frost, and so there's temperatures down there in the wintertime as low as 28 degrees, which is pretty bad for mango trees. They're very sensitive to cold temperatures. And 28 to 29 degrees will actually can kill the trees. And on the other side, there's very extreme high temperatures as well. So in the summertime, it can get anywhere from 120 degrees or beyond that. So the city that the mango orchard is in is actually called Thermal California, and it's often the hottest city in the country, actually. So it's very hot. And also there's excessive solar radiation, which causes a lot of fruit damage. There's calcareous sandy soil, so very high pH, not a lot of water or nutrient holding capacity, so they have to irrigate quite a bit, as you can imagine. And there's also issues with weed control and alkaline irrigation water, so it's a big challenge for organic producers out there. So this is our mango field experiment. We started in 2014, and it went up until 2016. We installed biochar and cover crops and also sulfur burners, which is an organic way to acidify irrigation water. So it reacts elemental sulfur with water to create sulfurous acid to lower the pH of the water. And it actually worked really well for their crop, so they did it on their whole field, so we don't have a control to compare anymore, so I'm not going to show that data, but that was part of our experiment as well. And we installed alfalfa and Sudan grass cover crops with and without biochar, so there's 6 treatments total in this experiment. And the biochar was installed at a rate of about 2 tons to the acre, so it's a relatively low amount. And we had about 1,800 trees in total for this experiment, so it was quite a large experiment. And we took some samples for soil nutrients, for mango leaf tissue nutrients, irrigation water, fruit yield and class, and tree growth, and those were taken annually. And then we took, last year, we took soil DNA samples as well. And that's what I'm going to be talking mostly about today. So this is just some images of the mango orchard out in the desert. So you can see the mango trees here. Then they whitewash them to help with the solar radiation because the fruit do tend to burn quite easily. And on the left here, you see the alfalfa cover crops, and on the right, there's nothing there. Those are just weeds as a control. And this is another image here, Sudan grass here on the left. Actually, you can see they're pretty tall, and they can get taller than the trees themselves, which provides some shading, which did have a benefit, and I'll talk about that later on. And on the right-hand side, there's cowpea. We try to use cowpea as a cover crop as well in this experiment, but it's actually too cold in the wintertime when we sow these cover crops for cowpea to really thrive. So we discontinued that after the first year. Okay, so we took soil DNA samples in the last year, like I said. So this was what I did with those soil samples. So they were taken from five subsamples within each replication, and I homogenized the soil there. And then I extracted DNA, and we sent it in for sequencing, and we used a standard primer, the 515F primer, to amplify the 16S region on an aluminum MiSeq, and they gave us about 20,000 reads per sample, so it's a lot of data. And I processed it using Chime2 to assign taxonomic units to the sequences, and then we did some downstream statistics in R and SAS as well. Okay, so this is just showing the overall phylum diversity in our soil samples. So these are actually the same graphs, they're just organized differently. On the right-hand side, they're organized by sample, so you can see that there's actually quite a lot of variation within each treatment. And on the left-hand side, I just wanted to show that generally the soils tended to be dominated by proteobacteria, which are really diverse, and there's a lot of plant growth-promoting organisms in that phylum, but also a lot of pathogens as well. So this doesn't give a lot of information, actually. This is alpha diversity. So alpha diversity is the measure of diversity within each sample. So actually, our Sudan, you can't really see it here, so I apologize, the text is so small. This here is alfalfa. On the left, this is the control, and this is Sudan grass. So Sudan grass actually showed the highest level of alpha diversity in our soil samples. And this is beta diversity. So alpha diversity is a measurement of diversity within each sample, and beta diversity is across different samples. And here, this is an NDMS plot, which is it's similar to a principal coordinate analysis, but it's a little different in how it's done. So on what I wanted to point out here is this blue circle here shows the distribution of the species with Sudan grass treatments, so that they had the highest level of beta diversity as well as alpha diversity. This red circle here shows alfalfa, and the green circle in the middle shows the control, which had the smallest amount of beta diversity. Then I did some targeted analysis to try and see which bacteria or which phylum were being upregulated or downregulated in our treatments. So these are, I apologize, I should have highlighted which ones were important. They're supposed to be red. But these, relative to the control, these phyla actually, actinobacteria increased, and these are decomposing organic matter, and they're gram-positive bacteria, and the rest of these phylum here actually decreased relative to the control. And this is true for both Sudan grass and alfalfa cover crop treatments, although the effect tended to be stronger in the Sudan grass treatments. So most of these actually are phylum that are important for cycling nitrogen, which is interesting that we saw a decrease in our cover crop treatments. This here shows, this is called a Kohonen map, and it's a way to visually inspect correlation in your data. So the first two just show how the map is organized, and then these next four blocks here are different treatments. So up here is alfalfa, this is Sudan grass, this is no cover crop, and this is biochar. And basically where you see similar patterns in our measurements here, there's a correlation in the data. So what I wanted to point out here is that our alfalfa treatments tended to correlate with high leaf nitrogen, and our Sudan grass treatments tended to correlate with micronutrients, calcium, boron, and iron in the mango leaf tissue. So it was improving the micronutrient status of the trees. And alfalfa was increasing the nitrogen levels of the trees as we expected, even though they showed a decrease in the microbes that cycle nitrogen. And then this is the yield results of our project here. So up at the top, the blue bars are the marketable yield, and the red bars are unmarketable. So they're on different scales as well. So you'll notice that the top here is about 80 kilograms, and this is about 12 and a half kilograms up at the top. So our treatments did not actually increase the marketable fruit yield. They actually tended to decrease the marketable fruit yield, but they did decrease the fruit losses. So you'll see that our control here had the highest amount of fruit loss. Well, all of our other treatments reduced the fruit loss, but it didn't actually increase the marketable fruit yield, so it might not be the best thing for these growers. And so that's the project, and so some of the conclusions that we can draw for this is that Sudan grass showed the highest levels of alpha and beta bacterial diversity, at least for 16S, and biochar alone did not reveal significant differences in the soil microbiome, but our cover crops did. And they actually saw reduced levels of nitrogen cycling phyla, which is interesting. Our alfalfa treatments increased mango leaf nitrogen, and Sudan grass treatments increased the micronutrients. That should be calcium, boron, and iron. And our treatments tended to lower the marketable fruit yield except for alfalfa and biochar, which actually showed similar yield to our control. But all of our treatments did significantly reduce fruit loss in this orchard, so. And with that, I will take questions. Yes. I think that they maybe are not needed as much for the plants because they're getting their nitrogen probably directly from maybe the alfalfa that's there instead of you know cycling different forms of nitrogen within the soil. Yes. So we reseeded the cover crops annually, and the biochar we installed once at the beginning in 2014, and the soil DNA was taken at the end of the experiment in 2016. We wanted to wait to give it some time to you know see some effects. Yes. It's generally just fruit burn. It's very clear that there's a solar radiation. That there's just like a big brown burn spot on the fruit. Yeah. Yes. It's total decrease. Yeah. Uh huh. Thank you.